It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Multi-track recording, one of the most important advancements in audio and music technology, was pioneered by a Wisconsinite, the Wizard of Waukesha, Les Paul.
Almost everything you might listen to on a daily basis that isn't, say, a live band, uses multi-track recording or the technology it made possible.
Even this interview, we recorded with a modern digital version of multi-tracking.
We're marking what would have been Les Paul's 110th birthday today with a look at his greatest contribution to the arts that will continue to be utilized and heard for generations to come.
Audrey Martinovich is co-owner of Audio for the Arts Recording Studios in Madison. She's a lecturer of music production at UW-Madison and the recently elected secretary of the Chicago chapter of the Recording Academy. Audrey, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I know Les Paul, a big deal in music, and I think of the guitar inventions he did. Getting ready for this conversation with you, I didn't realize what a big deal, how huge he was in developing multi-track recording. We'll get into what that means in a minute, but
yes,
just spell out how big a deal Les Paul is in the music we hear today.
Huge. His contribution cannot be overstated. Like, he completely revolutionized how music is made, you know? Like, I mean, before him, we all just went straight to two-track. We're getting married to the sound. If it sucks, we do it again. Delete, you know, you can't even delete things, right? We throw the tape away, do it again. And yeah, he's totally, completely changed how we even think of it. It's great.
And you teach the history of audio production to people, and Les Paul is a chapter in your instruction, right?
Yes, yeah. So I teach a Fundamentals of Music Production class at UW-Madison, and we open the semester with the history of how music technology has evolved and how do we get from vinyl to the MP3. And we definitely talk about Les Paul during that section, for sure.
Now, for people who haven't done sound stuff, let's talk about what we mean by multi-track recording. Mm-hmm. First of all, pre-multi-track, you mentioned basically you sit the musicians around, you put your, one microphone there or maybe two. Talk us through how that worked.
Yeah, so way back when, when sound, recorded sound was first just being discovered, basically we would, as if I was there, we would position instrumentalists around a cone and they would make their noises into this cone that takes all of these wiggly sound waves and puts them into a like a membrane where there's a stylus attached. So you can think of it as a stylus on your record player, you know, same kind of mechanism. And that stylus would carve into some wax the sound waves as it was moving that stylus. And then you do the reverse, where you just have this cylinder of wax and you play it backwards, and then the sound comes out of the cone instead of going into it. And that was how the very earliest of recordings were made. Someone messed up in the group. Everybody messed up in the group. You can't really redo things as much. As technology changed, we get the, you know, introduction of the microphone. We can start putting microphones in front of a singer like Frank Sinatra or whatever. Different instrumentalists.
And that, if I go back and listen to my recording now of Frank Sinatra, and wow, the trumpets are really loud and Frank's really quiet, I have to, get everybody back together and record it again.
Totally. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. That's how you would have to do it. Too loud, too quiet, not in the right, you know, tempo or whatever. They'd have to just completely redo it as a group. So the groups had to be really, really excellent back then.
Now here comes Les Paul and
yes,
multi-track recording. And he works with a company, and as I understand it, he's the first musician to end up with a multi-track equipment to record with. What does this mean? What is different about this technology than what we were just talking about?
Absolutely. So what's different about this is now all of these tracks are separate. So as a person who is not really into audio production, they might think of a track like a track on a CD, right? When we're talking about it now, we mean a track per instrument. So you have a kick drum, a snare drum, a rack, you know, floor, overheads, bass, guitars. All of these are separate tracks that can be edited and blended together. So where Les Paul was really revolutionary was in developing this, and he invented a process called overdubbing. And that is pretty much how music today is made, is these layers that you add together.
All right, we did a little demo here before you got into the studio. I sang four notes of a chord, one at a time. Lee Rayburn, our technical director, put them together, overdubbed them on different tracks. Okay, here's
amazing.
A listen. La, 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 la.
Yes.
And it's the Rob Ferret Barbershop Quartet.
It's
that,
so good.
Is that overdubbing you were talking about? I'm not a professional singer. That's the overdubbing you were just talking about.
Though. Exactly. That is such a good way to describe it because, you know, we didn't have ways for one person to create all these layers and play them back at the same time. That's what's really revolutionary about it.
And revolutionary is the word. Now we're coming, mm-hmm. He's doing this, what, in the 50s?
Yeah, early, yeah.
Okay. And music starts getting really interesting in the 1960s, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how people start experimenting with this ability to record multiple tracks, overdub, redo parts, all this stuff?
Yes, you start getting into these productions that, you know, it doesn't matter if you can play it live or not. You know, before this, it was pretty much what you heard in the room was what you got on the recording, but he'd record a rhythm guitar part.
Oh, sound.
And then he'd add another layer on top of that. And now another layer can come in where it's a harmony. And now another layer can come in where it's a solo on top of all of this stuff. And he was really the first, him and Mary Ford, his wife, were really the first people to do this. Then you start getting into, you know, some of the stuff that the Beatles were doing. You're not going to necessarily have a whole orchestra and a whole horn section and a whole, you know, whatever every time you tour. You know, it gives you a lot of flexibility in making a different production for the recording and then a different production for the live version of it, too. So you could hear the same song two completely different ways. It's really cool.
We're talking to Audrey Martinovich, co-owner of Audio for the Arts Recording Studios, lecturer in music production at UW-Madison. Talk about multi-track recording pioneered by Les Paul, the Wizard of Waukesha, on what would be his 110th birthday. Okay, now we have digital stuff, mm-hmm. right? And the little snippet we just played there, that was on a digital audio thing. So is pretty much most of the music we hear now, mm-hmm. I think. But this multi-track principle, all these conceptual ideas come from this stuff Les Paul was doing, what, 80 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that started in tape where, you know, once we start getting things down in this tape format, we can start editing and chopping. And so you'd actually literally take a razor blade, cut across the tape. You could remove a chunk of a song. You could flip it the other direction and tape it back in place and see what that sounds like. So all of these different editing techniques really started to develop over the course of these few decades.
Yeah, the tape thing. Now, if we have digital, the war on tape, when you're doing multi-tracks and maybe re-recording them and balancing them and things like that, tape, hiss. This is mm-hmm. a physical artifact, and noise and mistakes and things like that could build up, and this is a constant battle.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in really complex recordings like Bohemian Rhapsody, for example.
Is this the
There's so many vocal layers that are happening. So,
is this just fantasy?
What happens is we record all of these tracks, and tape can hold about 22 to 23-ish tracks. One track is reserved for time code just to keep all of these different elements in sync with each other, which didn't always happen and sometimes sounded kind of cool. Just depends on the thing. But you start adding all of these different layers and you run out of tape. So you take this tape and you bounce it down or you reprint it so it only takes up two tracks instead of the 22 or 23. And then now you have more tracks. You can add more and more layers. So as we do that, we get this addition of hiss on hiss on hiss. And, you know, for example, in that Bohemian Rhapsody recording, by the time they had all of these vocal layers and instrumental parts in place, they were on their seventh generation of tape. So we didn't have the plugins to kind of clean that up. And I think, you know, we used to be a lot more forgiving of just hearing that because the music is so good. Nowadays, we can very much clean all that stuff up. And in fact, when we do archival processes, where we take projects that are on tape and dub them into the digital format, we have the option to then clean them up at that phase, which sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Just depends.
All right, another Les Paul innovation here, and I'll maybe demonstrate. Like you said, It used to be the music. We'd have the room and everybody would project toward the microphone. And Les Paul, and I think to work with this idea of multi-track, pioneers people being right up on top of the microphone and being able to really control their dynamics in a lot of ways. How much difference does that make?
Oh, that makes such a huge difference because, I mean, back in ye olden days, that's the pre-multi-track tape days, you would just have to figure out, okay, what instruments are the loudest? You know, trumpets, for your example, like those, you know, don't really need to be as close to the mic. But now we can really get all sorts of nuance and tone without distorting a microphone or having it sound really ugly and hashy. So being able to work the mic and play with that distance is really amazing too.
Now, post Les Paul, does he get the recognition he deserves from musicians and then the music industry? Like I said, I know I've known about Les Paul for a long time, and I didn't really realize how innovative he was on the recording side of things.
Right. I think he definitely gets most of the recognition as far as, you know, his guitar and, you know, bass work and all of that stuff. I don't know that people do give him the recognition for multi-track inventions. I think most of the people that I know, like engineers and stuff, all recognize that. But that's one of the reasons why I want to make sure I bring him up to students, just because it is such a like a mind-blowing thing. Like, it doesn't happen every day where an idea comes along and it completely just changes the course of everything after that.
Getting back to digital now. Now, we hear about 4-track recorders, 8-track recorders, so that they could be bigger. And you talked about, okay, we've got to bounce tracks to save tracks. Digital, with big computers, big memory now, you can be on your 97th track and your computer keeps up with it fine. How much of a game changer is that beyond what we were doing on tapes?
I mean, that's huge too, because then, I mean, you get people like Jacob Collier who will post, you know, videos of his sessions on Instagram where he's got 500 and some tracks, and I'm like, okay, now you're doing too much. I'm just kidding, Jacob, in case you're listening. But he's an incredible musician and revolutionary in his own right. Really, the only limit is what your computer's processing is capable of. So, you know, it can be easy to do too much to music sometimes when the options are literally limitless. But the capability is pretty powerful.
Now, there's been an argument, I think, since CDs came out mainly, and I'm neutral on this, by the way. Do we lose something when you go from a physical medium, a wax cylinder, a vinyl album, even a magnetic tape, to a digital file printed on a CD or downloaded on your computer? What are your thoughts on the pros and cons in that argument?
Yeah, I love this argument because I think that 99.9% of people won't really understand a difference if they are hearing one, where it's coming from. And you can certainly start a project in a digital area and then run it through some analog gear and then back into digital. So you can still mix and match these things around. But the reason that people say analog is better is because when a recording is done, the waveform that comes out, so let's say I'm singing a note, you know, there's a waveform that is flying through the air in an analog format. That waveform is unchanged. It is completely exactly as it flew through the air. That is how it gets recorded onto the tape. When things are digitized, I liken it to a frame rate for a camera, right? Like a camera is going to take several pictures per second of a visual. And when we play them all back together, we see movement and we perceive movement. Same thing happens with sound. Instead of just 30 frames a second, it's, you know, 44,100 pictures of the sound per second. And when you play those back together, we perceive a continuous sound. So people argue that because it's not an exact copy of the waveform, it is, you know, degraded a little bit. But I think that the flexibility that digital offers with editing is, I mean, that's the whole reason to switch right there.
I'm interested in your thoughts on what people listen to all this stuff on. Because I think, I often think, like, if I were alive during the days when AM, you know, bad old AM radio was the only game in town, I probably wouldn't have a job in radio because I don't have that big booming radio voice that you need to carry through on that. So there's so many different options now: headphones, personal speakers, radios, stereo, whatever. How does that affect how the music you do is produced?
For sure. So in my studio, I have four different sets of monitors. That's what we call speakers in the studio. So if you want to be cool, say monitors. And they range in quality. And so some of them will enhance certain frequencies, like low end, and it'll sound really boomy. And some are there because they sound really bad. And they're going to sound like what, you know, the little Logitech speaker that you found in a box in your parents' basement. Now you're just going to plug it in and see what happens. It's intended to sound bad, because if you can make your mixes and your music sound really good on really bad speakers, it's going to sound incredible on really awesome speakers. So I like to audition things between all of these, because people are listening to music at home on a mono Alexa while they're doing dishes. You know, they're not going to, not everyone's going to have like an immersive experience with music. And so one of the challenges as an engineer is to make sure that the music translates well to all of those systems.
Now, you're using some of the highest tech stuff, I imagine, the digital editing suites. When you think about the history you teach about, is there a piece of technology, maybe something Les Paul used, that you feel nostalgic for or wish or think it would be fun to work in that medium?
I think it would be really cool to record to wax cylinder.
So oh, wow.
The very going way back, I have never done it. I've recorded to tape, done a little bit of tape editing. It's really cool. Definitely love that. And seeing, you know, students kind of light up when they get introduced to these old/new-to-them technologies is really cool. But I'd love to just experiment with the good old wax.
That'd be a blast. Audrey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Audrey Martinovich is co-owner of Audio for the Arts Recording Studio. She's a lecturer of music production at UW-Madison and recently elected secretary of the Chicago chapter of the Recording Academy. We've been talking about Waukesha's own Les Paul and his contributions to music recording technology. Today marks the 110th anniversary of his birthday.
And now we want to hear from the music people out there. Are you a musician or a sound engineer? How do you use multi-track recording? Have you worked with 4-track or 8-track recording on actual tape? How about digital audio editing? What's the coolest thing you've done using the magic of multitracks?
Apart from my singing harmony experiment we just heard, I love the magic that lets me play saxophone harmonies, and I'm deep into using music production software for my own experiments. Mostly what I've learned is how much I don't know about audio production.
So how about you? Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org, or you can call or text us. The number is 888-642-0232. We would really love to know about how you use audio production in your life. And thanks so much for being part of Wisconsin Today.